Thanks for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. On the campaign trail, President Obama reached out to American Indians across the country. He pledged to meet U.S. treaty obligations and said Native Americans would have a voice in his White House.
Here's what else that I intend to do. We're going to end nearly a century of mismanagement of Indian trusts. We're going to work together to settle unresolved cases, to figure out how the trusts ought to operate, and to make sure that they're being managed responsibly. Today, tomorrow, and always. That's a commitment that I'm making to you as President of the United States of America.
And this week, the Obama administration agreed to pay more than $3 billion to settle a lawsuit over land trusts for American Indians. Joining me here in the studio to talk about the proposal, Dennis Jingold. He's lead counsel for the plaintiffs. Also, Oklahoma Congressman Tom Cole. He's co-chair of the House Native American Caucus. Joining us from a studio in Montana, Eloise Cobell. She's the lead plaintiff in the class action suit. And joining us by phone from Copenhagen, David Hayes. He's deputy secretary of the Department of the Interior. Throughout the hour, we do invite your calls, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. And good morning. Welcome to all of you. Dennis, I'm going to start with you and get you to explain what this class action suit was all about.
We filed the suit in June of 1996 in order to enforce the trust obligations that the United States government owes to individual Indian trust beneficiaries. These are enrolled members of tribes west of the Mississippi who own land and trust and the natural resources related thereto. That's oil, gas, coal, hard rock minerals, timber. The United States since 1887 under the Dawes Act, and since it exercised control over these trust lands, has managed the lands, leased the lands, sold the lands, and collected the money related to it. The United States had never provided an accounting, reports from Congress, from the GAO, from inspectors general indicated that records had been destroyed for years. As a matter of fact, in 1989, the Senate Indian Affairs Committee reported that there was pervasive corruption and fraud at the Department of Interior with regard to the Indian oil. So Eloise Cobell and other individual Indians felt it was critical to try and correct what has been a devastating wrong, and we filed this action in equity in the United States District Court for the District of Columbia.
Dennis Jingold, he's lead counsel for the plaintiffs in Cobell v. Salazar. Turning to you, Eloise Cobell, I know you've been pushing against the tide on this. Why did you believe so strongly that this case had to go to court?
Well, because I tried to get this settled without going to court. I knocked on doors of the administration. I was in hearings, congressional hearings, for a number of years and continued to reveal the issues and the problems that existed within our trust accounts. And it just seemed like nobody would listen. I'd come back to Montana, and it would be the same old, same old. And I finally just got tired of listening to promises and empty promises and people saying that they were going to do something, and nothing happened. And so only, finally, as the last resort, I went out and found Dennis Jingold and asked him if he would represent us in filing a lawsuit. And fortunately, he said yes, and so that's how it was. Just the frustration of getting no answers, and And I felt that the individual Indian people were the underrepresented in this country and needed somebody to fight for them.
Eloise, tell me how difficult it was to find an attorney to represent you.
It was very difficult. I went to attorneys that had settled tribal claims for tribes and were paid a lot of money, and I thought that maybe I could convince them to come in and represent individual Indians. And the answer was no all the time, is that no, because I think they understood how difficult this case was and that they would have to go a long time before having any compensation. So it was just attorneys just didn't want to take on this case. And so it was, you know, and they knew, individual Indians, we didn't have any money. We're the poorest people in this country. And so, you know, they knew that, and so they didn't want to represent the poor people. And fortunately, Dennis came. When I asked Dennis, he said yes.
And I gather each member of the class action suit would receive a check for $1,000. The rest of the money would be distributed according to the land owned. Is that correct?
That's correct. Initially, there will be a $1,000 payment to every individual Indian account beneficiary that has an account. And you know, I think that means a lot because people have been waiting for years for something. And just the fact that you know, there was a victory and that, you know, we were able to prevail. And so I think that initial payment's going to mean a lot. And then there will be a formula calculation on the balance to get to the individual Indians that had more resources at stake.
Eloise Cobell, she's lead plaintiff in the class action lawsuit, Cobell versus Salazar. She's a member of Montana's Blackfeet tribe. And turning to you, Congressman Cole, as a member yourself of the U.S. Congress, you are from Oklahoma's 4th District. You are a member of the Chickasaw Nation and co-chair of the House Native American Caucus. What do you think of the proposal?
Well, first of all, I think Eloise and Dennis are to be congratulated for an extraordinary accomplishment. And it took a lot of perseverance. I'm like probably a lot of other Native Americans in the sense that, do I think the settlement ought to be greater? Of course I do. And but this is a remarkable achievement. And frankly, you know, as somebody who is generally on opposite sides politically with the president on most issues, says a lot about the administration in a very positive way. There were previous Democratic and Republican administrations that could have come to the table and settled this a lot sooner. And it should have happened frankly, in my opinion, both President Clinton and President Bush's watch. The fact that President Obama and his department were willing to reach out and work with the plaintiffs, you know, it just says a lot about them and their basic attitude toward tribal nations. So,
Tom Cole, he's a Republican congressman from Oklahoma's 4th District. And turning to you now, David Hayes, as Deputy Secretary of the Department of the Interior, I know you helped lead the settlement efforts. How were you, as Congressman Cole has already described, after so many years of unsuccessful efforts in this regard, how were you able to achieve a settlement?
Well, Diane, I think it was a combination of factors. The first factor you appropriately put right up front as the lead-in here to your show, and that is the president's personal commitment to get this matter behind us. And his view and Secretary Salazar's and my view was that the mistakes of the past should be acknowledged and addressed and put behind us so that we can get on to the broader agenda in working with Eloise and other Native Americans to address issues like public safety, education, economic opportunity, et cetera. And I appreciated the forthrightness of Eloise, of Dennis, and the entire plaintiff's team, and we also had a judge who was helpful in bringing us together.
What about the value of the settlement itself, Secretary Hayes?
The settlement, we think, is a it's a fair settlement. It's a generous a settlement, appropriately so. And one of the important features of this, Diane, as I'm sure your other guests will confirm, is in addition to providing compensation to individual Indians, it also sets aside a large fund of $2 billion to facilitate the buyback of very small fractionated interests in land that are actually standing as a break to the possibility of using Indian land productively on behalf of tribes. And this is potentially gives us the chance to turn back the clock and address one of the stains on in American legal history of the Allotment Act. By returning lands to productive use for the benefit of Indian communities.
David Hayes, he's joining us by phone from Copenhagen. He's Deputy Secretary of the Department of Interior. Also on the line with us, Eloise Cobell, lead plaintiff in the class action lawsuit, Cobell versus Salazar. Tom Cole is Republican congressman from Oklahoma's 4th District. Dennis Jingold, lead counsel for the plaintiffs in Cobell v. Salazar. When we come back, we'll give a little historical background to this case. Take your calls. I look forward to hearing from you. And in this hour, we're talking about the federal government's agreement to settle the class action suit that was raised to compensate individuals who are Native Americans for mismanagement of tribal trusts by the U.S. Department of the Interior. You can join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Here's a message from Facebook, which comes from Brian. He says, I'm a Native American and a member of the Lenape tribe. I was elated to hear about this. The government needs to keep making strides to strengthen relationships with the tribes. I commend Obama for his efforts. This is long overdue. Eloise Cobell, I'm sure you feel the same way.
Well, yes, it's like I explained to some individual Indians last night at the airport when I came in from Washington. I said it's like riding into the cavalry and coming out alive. So it's a great great victory for individual Indians. And yes, you know, maybe the money should have been a lot larger. I mean, I think that's the part that bothers me. like Representative Cole said, is that, you know, they're due a lot, individual Indians are due probably a lot more money, but, you know, how long can we live? And so I am very appreciative to the administration for coming forward and listening and following through with their promises. You know, we've been promised a lot in Indian country, and it's very seldom or very rarely that we have people that follow through with their promises. So I appreciate that very much.
Eloise, you had an attorney who was willing to work constantly on this case for the past 13 years, but you've been working on it for even longer than that, have you not?
Well, I think like a lot of individual Indians across the nation, is this is something we grew up with. These are the stories that we heard when we were growing up. And my home is that, you know, I can't understand why I can't get my money. If I had my money, I would buy school clothes for my children. If I had my money, and I always wondered in my mind, I was pretty young, you know, we didn't have a lot of distractions at that point in time. It was, we had no TV, no telephones, no nothing but just each other, and I'd always wondered, why can't people get their money? And so that pretty much stayed with me my entire life, and so I guess if you want to talk about working on this, like many individual Indians, I'm not by myself, that it's just been with us, and we want it to get it resolved for years and years. And so it's been a lifetime's work. But I do want to say about, you know, our attorney that we were able to convince to come our way and support us is he never took a vacation. He was, you could call Christmas Day and he'd be working, or Thanksgiving Day. It was just constantly reading and being prepared. And, you know, there was a lot of trials that we went through in this case. And so we really have to thank our legal team.
Dennis Jingold, why did this case mean so much to you? Why were you willing to put so much time and effort into it?
It's a question of right and wrong. When I heard the story of the abuse of the individual Indian trust from actually the deputy director of OMB in the first Bush administration back in 1992, and I heard that things were getting worse and people were suffering, I think we as attorneys have an obligation, if we can, to correct these things. Too many people have turned their backs on those who are vulnerable. And I think we've learned a lot of things over the years. And one of those things is we as attorneys really do have an obligation. Mm. And I think, for example, Secretary Hayes in the environmental area did the same sort of things on environmental matters. And we've heard Judge Robertson in the civil rights area do the same thing. There's a time for us to stand up. There's a time for us to do something. And there's a time for us to ensure that the law is enforced fairly.
Secretary Hayes, this the history of this goes back to 1887. Can you give us briefly a little bit of the history of how all this happened and how the trusts were mismanaged?
Certainly, Diane. In 1887, the United States launched a terrible policy for Indian country that suggested that Indian lands should be divided and sold off. And as part of that, allotments were made to individual Indians. The policy was recognized as being a mistake because of the breakup of Indian communities. And in 1934, the policy was reversed. But by then, the damage had been done, and there were allotments that had been given out to individual Indians. Thankfully, they remained in trust. But as the generation succeeded, those interests became divided and subdivided and further divided. And the United States had a trust obligation, as was mentioned at the outset by Dennis and Eloise, to track income coming in on this land and to make sure that it got sent to the beneficiaries of the trust, the individual Indians. Over time, we now have literally 4 million individual Indian interests in some of these allotted lands. So the United States has had a challenging time keeping track of the trust. And as was pointed out in litigation, the United States really breached that trust and did not do a good accounting. And we are very pleased to now start fresh with these payments and going forward, looking to do a better job of accounting for individual trusts and cutting down on the number of trusts by dealing with this fractionation problem that's a legacy of a poor policy that goes back to 1887.
But can you explain how you were able to assess the value of the settlement, Secretary Hayes?
Yes, Diane. There are a couple of components to it. There's an accounting case. The errors in accounting that were made and confirmed through the last several years as a result of this litigation gave us some information about how much was owed. And in addition, we had fruitful discussions with the plaintiffs in going further than just the accounting. And we made some assumptions that some of those underlying assets were poorly managed by the United States in the past. And we, in fact, up to $1 billion of the settlement deals with assumed mismanagement because we thought that was a fair thing to do given the findings that had been made by previous courts. And then, moreover, we thought it important to solve this problem to the extent we can looking forward through the land consolidation program I referred to as well. We also signed Ken Salazar signed a secretarial order that's going to establish a new commission to look at going forward how we can do a better job of managing these trusts.
Now, turning to you, Congressman Cole, doesn't this whole matter now move to the Congress?
It absolutely does. While the administration and the parties in the dispute can make settlement, we have to fund it at the end of the day. Fortunately, I think that's likely to happen in relatively short order.
Senator, you do?
I do. Senator Dorgan has made it a top priority. He's chairman of the Indian Affairs Committee in the Senate. I think there's broad bipartisan agreement. Probably the difficulty will come as to whether or not it's a standalone piece of legislation, which in my opinion would make it easier, or whether it gets attached to something that's more controversial as a sort of a must-pass and it's an unrelated thing. And that could cause some partisan differences. But at the end of the day, I think Congress will step up to the plate and will settle this and needs to do it.
And Eloise, how optimistic are you about what the Congress has to do? And then I gather what the courts have to do after Congress approves, if it approves.
Well, like Congressman Cole, I'm very optimistic because Congress has been trying to deal with this issue for a number of years.
And why do you think Congress has not done the right thing over all these years?
Well, I think that they didn't have an administration that was willing to work with Congress. There was settlement. We had settlement proposals on the table many times, and the administration just wouldn't look at the proposals. And so it's a different situation. I think everyone has explained it very clearly this morning. People are all working together to get this horrible misjustice corrected and try to move forward. And so I think Congress is well aware of that. It's been going on for a number of years, and I think that they're very well aware of it. And after this process, there has to be a time period for people to get out to Indian country and explain it to the individual Indian beneficiaries, and that'll take a period of time. And then, of course, the judge will have a fairness hearing. So there's a lot of moving pieces that have to happen, and I hope they happen very quickly because individual Indian people have waited too long.
Dennis Jingold, what do you say to the critics who say it's too little, it's too late?
Well, it isn't too late. People are alive. The elderly need their money. Children need their money. The infirm need their money. it's never too late if we have people who can benefit from something like this. It's too little? No. Nobody will ever know, quite frankly, how much money is due because the records don't exist and the accounting is so difficult. It is difficult under these circumstances because of funds that are available in the public fisc, although this is our clients' money. Nevertheless, it's going to have to come out of the judgment fund. We are not in good economic times. There's a lot of stress on the entire nation economically. This is going to provide significant benefits in Indian country to some people who have nothing. In addition, it's not going to compromise their entitlements programs as we go forward, which is very critical. And that was one of the very positive things that Secretary Hayes was concerned about, to ensure that these monies that are going to be provided will not disqualify anyone who's eligible for continuing entitlements. So this is a reasonable settlement. We believe that if the Court of Appeals viewed things differently on how trust laws applied to Indians, it would have been higher, but we were dealing with reality. Mm-hmm. We have to deal with reality in Washington. We have to deal with reality with the lives of our clients. This will, in my view, substantially improve their lives, and that's why we brought this litigation.
Congressman Cole, considering the fact that Congress did not do anything on this for the past 100 years, why are you so optimistic that they'll move forward quickly?
Well, actually, I think Congress has been prepared to do something for a long time. Dennis and I were talking about the trust settlement legislation back in 1994. Congress has been anxious to do something. Administrations have missed the opportunity. Frankly, the Clinton administration did, and the Bush administration, which could have solved this coming in the door and should have. It was one of the things I recommended to them. Missed, I think, a golden opportunity.
But if it was so easy to accomplish, why didn't they?
Somebody has to request the legislation.
And you're saying that Eloise, with her...
Look, if we hadn't had the litigation, this wouldn't be here. I mean, Eloise is a hero, in my opinion, and so is Dennis. I mean, they're the point of the spear, so to speak. They made this happen. Congress has been willing to step up. What we've had is, and again, this is bipartisan failure, in my opinion, but we finally have an administration that is willing to step up and do the right thing. So I think we can put together the support. But look, if you want to look back on Indian policy for the entire history of the country, I'd just recommend people go back and read Joseph Ellis's wonderful book, American Creation. You'll know how bad it's been from the very beginning.
Congressman Tom Cole, he's from Oklahoma's 4th District. And Secretary Hayes, I know you have to leave us. I want to thank you for joining us from Copenhagen this morning.
Thank you, Diane. It was my pleasure. Thank you so much for spending time on this important issue and educating your listeners about it. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks so much. And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. It's time to open the phones. Let's go first to Mystic, Connecticut. Good morning, Connie. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to make a brief comment.
Sure.
And that is that my husband and I are both educators and have traveled quite a bit, lived in several states in the country. And we have encountered some incredible racism and hostility toward Native Americans. And, it tends to it intensifies along with the visibility of Native Americans in particular areas and the numbers. But what we've found is that it's linked to a kind of shameful ignorance on the part of this country about Native American history, specifically the resources and how they've been misused and outright stolen in many cases, and specifically oil in Oklahoma, timber in Michigan, uranium in Arizona. I mean, these resources have been critical And they've been mismanaged horribly.
All right. Thanks for your call, Congressman Cole.
Well, your call is exactly right. And you know, there's some things you can never account for. For instance, when land is, let's just say, theoretically worth $100 a year, you can lease it out at a dollar, and it's a dollar in, dollar out, and the accounting looks great, but it's dramatically undervalued. And there's no way to ever get at that. And that happened repeatedly. But your caller's other point, I'll just tell a personal story. I remember once being out on the Chesapeake, and it was one of these wonderful tours of the Sound. It was great, and there was a taped story of the area. And, you know, I am Native American, and so they talked about the presence of the American Indians in the Chesapeake Bay in the 17th and 18th century, and they said, but the area was then detribalized. Well, that's a very nice way to say ethnically cleansed.
Wow.
I couldn't believe that was on a tape.
Wow.
You know, and how ignorant that was about what happened, and frankly, how offensive it would be to anybody that really knew the history behind it. But this is a chapter Americans need to know more about.
Tom Cole, Republican congressman from Oklahoma's 4th District. He's a tribal enrolled member of the Chickasaw Nation, co-chair of the House Native American Caucus. We'll take just a short break. We'll take more of your calls when we come back. Stay with us.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, promoting lifelong family connections for children and youth, on the web at aecf.org. By the Kiplinger Foundation, supporting public understanding of business and the economy. And by the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, your source for what works in public education. Learn more at edutopia.org. This is NPR.
Andy Williams struggled for years before becoming one of the most popular entertainers of the 20th century. We talk about his 7 decades in show business and performing live at the age of 82. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour.
Maker, you heartbreaker, wherever
as we talk about the federal government's $3.4 billion settlement with Native Americans. We have an email from Lily, who's in Tacoma Park, who says, please expand on the buyback provision. Is the U.S. government buying back individuals' interest in these lands and then holding it in trust again on behalf of the tribes? Who will benefit from the resource use on these lands in the future? Eloise.
Well, once the land is, the fractionated airship lands, David Hayes talked about, Secretary Hayes talked about, will be small parcels of property which probably has not received any money or has not been leased out. As it exists today, so it gives the individual Indian an opportunity to sell those fractionated airship land after a proper appraisal. It's my understanding it's been held by the government for a period of time, and then revert it back to the tribe, which I think is a win-win for the tribes. And as far as, you know, how it is to be managed, I'm not clear on that yet, and I'm going to refer to Dennis.
Well, just a point. I wouldn't call it a buyback program. This was not land that was given by the United States government to individual Indians. This was land that belonged to tribes that was allotted to individual Indians. So it's really not buyback. But the funds that will be used to purchase the fractionated interest will allow the fractionated interest to be restored to the tribes. And without restoration, those lands will be managed like the other tribal trust lands. And many of the tribes today manage their own trust lands through compact contract and cooperative agreement.
Congressman Cole.
Well, it is a terrific win for the tribes. We have many of these instances in my state. About 50,000 of the individual Indian recipients, which is almost a sixth, are actually from Oklahoma. I run into these problems repeatedly of people that own minuscule amounts of property. The ability for them to actually get something out of it, and then, frankly, for the tribe to be able to administer it and manage it to the benefit of tribal people, I think is one of the really appealing parts of the settlement. And, I really commend Dennis and the administration and obviously Eloise for putting together something that's not just money coming back to individuals, because while it's helpful, it's not a life-changing experience.
Yeah.
The land is.
So help me to understand, will individuals who are involved in this each get a check for $1,000, Dennis?
The answer is yes.
And is there any limitation? Are there any strings attached to what can be done with that $1,000?
It's their money. They can do with it what they wish to do. And many of the class will be receiving a second check, which will be significantly more based on the income generated from their trust lands for a period of time. And that is also going to be significant. It's their money. It will be directly distributed to them, not through the government.
All right. Let's go to Tulsa, Oklahoma. Good morning, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi, Diane. I just wanted to point out that this resolution is just about time, because in the history of America and its history with Native America, in all there's never been a treaty made between the government and Native America that has been honored over the past 200 years. Not one single treaty. Native Americans have been relegated to the worst lands, and then when it's discovered that the land is valuable, they've been cheated out of it, out of their head rights, you know, their mineral rights. That's what made the FBI. Their first case was in investigating the theft of head rights from Osages here in Oklahoma, and that's what made them so famous, the FBI. And furthermore, based on the logic that created the State of Israel, I think you could create a state right here in the United States for Native America.
Congressman Cole.
Well, I think your caller, touches on how deep the history and the aggrievement is. And he's 100% right about what happened to the Osage and what happened to many individual Indians. Basically, once the land was broken up and awarded to allottees, they were looted out of it pretty systematically. And remember, this was done over the objection of the tribes. The tribes never wanted to surrender their land to be broken up in this way, and then vast sections also bought for pennies on the dollar and opened up to white settlement. So, I don't think you can go back and rewrite history or change history or... But it's nice to see the recognition. And Dennis made the point before we were in here, and he was absolutely right, about how symbolically important this is to Native Americans. It's a lot like the recognition of what happened to Japanese Americans during the internment, a recognition of a historic wrong. It doesn't make it right, but thank you for acknowledging it.
Now to Paul. He's in St. Louis, Missouri. Good morning, Paul. You're on the air.
Good morning. I was wondering what your guests thought this action might do to affect the African-American reparations 40 acres and a mule movement.
Any comments? Eloise.
I don't have a comment right now. I know that that's been a long struggle for many of the African-American people. But I'll tell you, I've been focused on this case.
Of course. Congressman Cole, any thoughts?
My focus has been here. I do think, without making a judgment, because I think obviously what happened to African-Americans, is a tremendous stain on the country. But these were legal agreements between pre-existing governments and individuals that weren't honored by the United States government. They're not legally, in my opinion. They're morally comparable. I don't think they're legally comparable.
Interesting. Until perhaps some attorney takes that issue on, you may not see it. What do you think, Dennis?
Well, I think Eloise and Congressman Cole are correct in their description. This is a trust that is established for the benefit of individual Indians. And it wasn't a trust that was established willingly, as noted. This was established at gunpoint. And if the gunpoint wasn't, if the gun wasn't good enough, they starved the Indians until they agreed. So we have something that, as a matter of law, as a matter of trust law, is enforceable like any other trust in the history of the United States. We have 700 to 800 years of trust law that supports what we're doing here. With regard to the African-American situation, I'm not as familiar, but I know it wasn't pursuant to a trust established on behalf of the individual African-Americans. We do have trust instrument based on statutes that have been acted. So we have 700 to 800 years of law supporting what we're doing here.
All right. To San Antonio, Texas. Good morning, Susan. Thanks for joining us. Susan, are you there? Go right ahead, please.
Hello. While working as a librarian in South Dakota, I came across what I think is called a plat book, an old plat book, that shows lots on one of the reservations, probably Pine Ridge, changing hands from Indian families to non-Indians. It was really horrifying to look at. It's in the archives, and I don't know if it's ever been cataloged. So if anybody's looking for a resource of any sort about that area, it would be helpful to track it down.
Dennis, are you interested?
I'd be very interested. I think the most complete information available is essential to the management of the trust in the future. This settles historical abuse. The trust obligation of the United States continues, and the trust responsibilities and duties are as significant as they are for any human being in this country. So therefore, whatever information can improve the completeness and accuracy is important.
So let's see if we can put Susan on hold and perhaps gain a telephone number where she can be reached. Thanks for calling, Susan. Let's go now to Indianapolis. Art, you're on the air.
Yes, I wanted to thank you for this program. I think it's very, very a wonderful thing that the Indians have gotten some compensation for all the mineral and oil rights. In the 1950s, my mother's sister's second husband, who was a realtor, spent about 10 years of his life representing the Indian interests, and I can't tell you all the nations that were involved, but as a result of which he was successful in winning a very large settlement in that day for the land value, not for the mineral rights. And as a result of which, I have a rug from Sitting Bull in my collection.
That must be an interesting rug to see.
Yes, indeed.
Give us a sense of its dimensions and some of the color you see in that rug, Art.
It's about 4 by 6 feet. It was a rug on which he apparently sat to smoke his pipe when he was having important considerations on various different matters at a trial.
Well, that's clearly something you're going to want to hold on to for a very long time. Thanks for calling, Art. Now to Enfield, New Hampshire. Charles, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Yes, I'm reading a book now called American Indian Sovereignty and the U.S. Supreme Court by David Wilkins. And I was wondering if this lawsuit will have any effect on constitutional questions that are under consideration. I was specifically interested to find out that Section 8 of our Constitution specifically mentions Indian tribes in the Commerce Clause.
Eloise, do you want to comment?
I think that's a question that Dennis would...
All right. Dennis.
First, this action was brought on behalf of individual Indians, not on behalf of any tribe. Tribes have their own trust. The effect on tribes is through the restoration of the land within their jurisdiction. The authority of Congress with regard to Indian affairs is plenary, as noted, because it's in the Constitution. Nevertheless, our lawsuit was for the benefit of individuals.
How many?
Approximately 500,000 individual Indian trust beneficiaries.
Wow. That's a lot of people to be representing. The weight of that on your shoulders, Dennis, must have felt pretty heavy along the way.
Every day. There's no doubt. We felt the need to do the best we could because we didn't think there'd be another opportunity in history to be able to accomplish this. So we felt that way every single day.
Do you agree with that, Congressman Cole, that having come this far, this long, without resolution, that this presented the one opportunity thus far?
I do agree with that. And, you know, I think it's awful easy to second-guess the people that were in the arena. Eloise and Dennis were in the arena, and they fought a long and a hard fight.
You bet.
And without them, honestly, we would not be here. So I just admire them both so greatly, but I think they knew when to bring it to an end. And I'm very impressed with the manner in which they did it because they took care of the individuals and provided a legacy going forward for generations unborn.
Congressman Tom Cole, Republican of Oklahoma, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. And to Harriet, who's here in Washington, D.C., good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Concerning, you know, why a better settlement, why a more reasonable settlement because of lack of records, I remember years ago a photograph, I believe it was in the Washington Post, and it was a box and boxes and boxes of records, I guess at an agency, Indian agency, I suppose. In fact, that's what it was. Just standing there that no one had bothered to pick up. That's why. That's what happened to many records. And I guess all across the nation. I think it was kind of like a plan not to have records. So that's my reason.
All right, Dennis Jingold, you believe that deliberate loss of records was part of this whole problem?
Well, we're dealing with a combination of corruption, negligence, incompetence. It's a full gamut. And the lack of belief that trust duties apply to the United States government. It is unfortunate in a normal trust situation, including in the law of the circuit, that when a trustee is unable to demonstrate how it has conducted the affairs of the trust and cannot itemize each transaction, the trustee is liable fully for that. Unfortunately, the Court of Appeals in this circuit did not apply the law that's been applied to every trust. That's the reality we deal with. It's a political reality. We as lawyers cannot understand that. Nevertheless, we must proceed and do the best we can for our clients anyway.
Congressman Cole.
Well, and you can't overemphasize how often the records that were kept were corrupt. They were hiding a corrupt bargain or a corrupt transaction.
Give me an example of how they could do that.
It's very easy. Again, if I'm going to lease you mineral rights and you want them at a bargain basement price, a hundredth of what they're worth, we just write up the contract. Who's to say what it's worth? And I say, okay, we're going to charge you X amount instead of Y. You pay X. It's really worth Y. You can never go back and establish that. Happened repeatedly. The best single record of this is Angie DeBose's wonderful book, And Still the Water Flows, about what happened to individual allottees in Oklahoma amongst the tribes that lost their lands. And again, there was a lot. As one of your earlier callers mentioned, you literally had families adopted, children stealing their land and then shoving them back into orphanages. It's just unbelievable what occurred.
It sounds to me, Eloise Cobell, as though you've just gotten the first layer of the onion.
That's right. And more importantly, I think that everyone has talked about here today is trust reform going into the future. We've got to make sure that history doesn't repeat itself here. We've got to make sure that individual Indians are provided all the information on the property that they own and the money going forward, and extreme accountability to individual Indian people. And to me, that was the most important part of this case.
Eloise Cobell, lead plaintiff in the class action lawsuit Cobell versus Salazar. She's a member of Montana's Blackfeet tribe. Tom Cole is Republican congressman from Oklahoma. He's a member of the Chickasaw Nation and co-chair of the House Native American Caucus. And Dennis Jingold, for many years, he has been the lead counsel for the plaintiffs in Cobell v. Salazar. Thank you all for your efforts. Thank you for your accomplishments. And thank you for being here. Thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information.